Hey, welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball. We caught up this week with Stephen Ashworth, who's a sophomore at Utah State, but a really interesting career. High school basketball, he grew up in Alpine, Utah for the most part, played at famed Lone Peak High School. And, late in his high school career, he blew up. He'll tell you about all that. Was set to go to Utah State with Tim Duryea. Duryea gets fired, thought about opening up his recruitment, goes on his Mormon mission, comes back, and now last year played a huge role with Craig Smith's Aggies. Craig Smith leaves, goes to Utah. Did he think about transferring? What is Ryan Odom like to play for? And what's it like to be only 4 months married? Plus, he's been on social media a ton trying to get name, image, and likeness deals. Let's catch up with the star point guard for the Aggies of Utah State, Stephen Ashworth.
Okay, so I want to get to the name, image, and likeness thing. I want to get to the fact you guys have a new coaching staff and what that's all like. But explain to me the Lone Pine deal. So I remember probably a decade ago, somebody telling me like, man, there's this high school in Utah and they got dudes, dudes everywhere, right?
Yeah.
What Lone Pine High School? Is that just a regular high school where lots of players live close? Is it a private school? Like, what is, for somebody who's not a Beehive Stater, what is Lone Pine High School?
Yeah, so it's actually Lone Peak. So
okay, Lone Peak, my bad.
Lone Peak. There's a mountain peak called Lone Peak right up above the school. So it's called Lone Peak High School. And I believe, honestly, just the basketball dominance that it's had over the past 20 years really started with head coach Quincy Lewis when he was there. And then many people know him as he went to BYU after. And now he's back in the state of Utah coaching high school basketball once again. But it's a public school, completely public. You have to live in school boundaries in order to go to Lone Peak. And so, we couldn't have some of the top basketball players in the state live in, different cities and come to school there just to play for Lone Peak. And so a lot of people started to take notice when they were on that national stage. And, we had great talent all the way back with Jackson Emery and Tyler Hawes at Lone Peak. And I think that kind of just created the culture that if you want to play for Lone Peak, you got to be great. And that developed players like Nick Emery, TJ Haas, Eric Mika. And they actually in 2013 were named national champions.
Yeah. So all of those kids actually grew up right there, or did some families move into the country?
So surprisingly, the Emerys, the Haases, the Mikas, they all lived there in Alpine. Grew up there and me myself, I moved there when I was five. And at the time my parents weren't really thinking basketball and we should move to Lone Peak because we lived in a boundary, where high school was already really good at basketball. It was just kind of a change of scenery for the family. And, I was fortunate enough to grow up going to all those high school games, watching those guys. And so I think that kind of helped fuel my passion for basketball.
Okay, so when you say I grew up going to those games, the basketball obviously is such a big part of the Mormon community, just huge. Any Mormon church has basketball gym and guys play basketball. But how big's the gym at Lone Peak?
The gym at Lone Peak can fit 3,500 people, and so it's a pretty average, high school arena. There was a time for a while when we would play our rival American Fork High School. We'd either have to have that game down at Utah Valley University or at the Marriott Center at BYU, just for crowd attendance. And so, all of those games were always packed. It was always sold out and it was a fun environment. I remember one of the funnest games was when we played St. Joseph out of New York. They came in for an ESPN game at Lone Peak and it was crazy, just the atmosphere and the students and just the passion for basketball. Because you're right, every church around here in the LDS faith, we have a basketball gym. And so kids grow up young, go into that gym and working out with their dads or their siblings or their friends. And, during the summer, we were there every day just playing pickup at the church. And it was awesome.
So Jimmer, okay. Now, obviously, Jimmer comes in. He's a star at BYU, but he's not from Utah. As a kid who grew up in Alpine, when I say Jimmer Fredette, like, is he one of your guys? Is he not? Like, how is he thought of in the state of Utah?
Jimmer Fredette is arguably the greatest college basketball player of all time. And that's what the state of Utah believes in. And you know, it's sad that he didn't have, you know, quite the career in the NBA that everybody was hoping to see, you know, that Steph Curry's been able to have. And, but it's interesting. I remember vividly, going to, it was a huge game, San Diego State, Kawhi Leonard. It was a top 10 game down in Provo. And I remember going to that game and just the atmosphere around Jimmer. It was crazy. And it was something that I aspired to be. I wanted to be a player in the state of Utah that other little kids wanted to be when they grew up. And so Jimmer is definitely somebody that I look up to. I've met a few times. I've done some workouts with him, and the guy I trained with, Paul Peterson, knows him really well. And so always a super genuine dude. And people, you know, whether we're Utah State fans, Utah fans, BYU fans, there's a pretty wide consensus that everybody respects what Jimmer Fredette was able to do in the game of college basketball. And now it's crazy to see what Damian Lillard did out of Weber State. But in that time period, it was all about Jimmer. And
it's crazy, right, that everybody paid attention to Jimmer. Here is Damian Lillard, who's actually an Olympian and an NBA All-Star. Okay, so you know, if you go back to, you know, late 90s and 2000s, obviously Utah, when Majerus was there, was hot. And they've gone up and down. They've had some great runs even since. BYU, Jimmer was their peak in the last 20 years. But and this is a guy who grew up hooping at a Mormon church in the city of Orange in California. I sneak in with my Mormon buddies, right? And so, and then my brother was an assistant at San Diego State, so I know a lot about BYU back when obviously those games were taking place.
Yeah.
But for you growing up, was BYU the school? Like, I mean, because you end up now being a starter at Utah State. Like, what was your school, or was it more players? Because I always thought that Mormon kids want to go to BYU first, and then after that, you know, maybe Utah, or then Utah State. Like, what was the school growing up?
Personally, for me, it was like, obviously living in Utah County, you're surrounded by BYU, and then there's the divide between BYU and Utah, and then obviously Utah State's a little more north. And so down in Utah County, there. Even when I go back home, like, I'm like, dang, like, we need to get some more love for the Aggies down here, whether it be in the sports stores or stuff like that. Because really, obviously, the sports, you know, stores are there to make their money, and they make a lot off of just the rivalry between BYU and Utah and that division between red and blue. And so growing up, I personally really admired the players and the individuals. And so it was always a dream of mine to play Division I basketball. And, you know, with the way recruiting goes, I never really had an idea of where I wanted to actually eventually end up. And so I kind of distanced myself from kind of picking a school that I would deem as my school. But I definitely supported guys like Jimmer and then Tyler Hawes, just the Lone Peak guys were a lot of the guys that I watched and looked up to. But then right about my ninth grade year, and high school is when I started noticing Sam and what he was doing at Bountiful, and like, small world comparison. One of our best family friends was actually his mission companion in the mission when he served in Nicaragua. And so that's when I kind of started taking even more notice. And when I came up to the visits here at Utah State, Sam was always, you know, super welcoming and was a big part of why I wanted to come here. Is I wanted to keep that legacy that he created going. And so to kind of answer that question in short, I think it was really more about who my guys were rather than was I a big Utah fan or big Utah State fan or BYU fan, and with the proximity, I probably went to the most of the BYU games than any other.
What is the decision like as to whether or not you're going to go on your mission?
A lot of it's just based on personal preference. We've been asked, whether it be in the scriptures or whether by the leaders of the church, to share the message of the gospel. And so for me, it was a hard decision, but at the same time, an easy decision, because I knew how important it was to share the message of hope and just of love with the world that we live in today. And so I knew that it would be an experience that, that I couldn't pass up. And I had great examples, and my dad, my brother, and even other guys that played basketball at Olympique that went on missions. You know, I looked up to them a lot, and that helped facilitate my decision to serve. But there was a time where my very last high school basketball game made that decision to go on a mission more difficult than it was, just with the publicity that I received from that. It was the Geico Nationals in 2018, where we played RJ Barrett and Mont Bird. And so that game kind of changed the course, but eventually I still ended up going on my mission right after that.
How did it change the course?
So right then, the coach of Utah State got let go, and Coach Smith was just hired. And so that opened up my recruiting once again as basically a non-committed player. And it was right during the Final Four, where all the coaches are in the ballrooms and meeting with each other. And I scored 29 points in the second half on RJ Barrett. And everybody was going crazy on Twitter and social media and everything. And that night, my head coach, Coach Evans, got a call from the assistant coach, John Shire at Duke, saying, "Hey, we want Steven to come." And it had been something that we were talking about early on, at the beginning of my senior year. We were talking about possibly being a preferred walk-on at Duke. And they said that if they didn't fill all of their 13 or 14 scholarship positions, then I would be the first in line to change that preferred walk-on to a scholarship spot. And so he called my coach and said, "Hey, we want Steven, but not as a preferred walk-on. We have that open scholarship." And so that was kind of the decision that became really tough, to pass down a full-ride scholarship to play at Duke to serve my mission. But ultimately, it came down to that I knew that God came first, and that He'd provide a way. And then honestly, I couldn't be happier than where I'm at here at Utah State.
So what was it like for you? Okay, so you turned down Duke to go on a mission, right? Also turned down Duke to stay loyal to Utah State, even though they got rid of Coach Duryea and they hire a guy in Craig Smith who, like, you don't know.
Yeah.
When did you find out, like, timeline wise, where you were going?
So that game, the game happened in March, and they basically, Duke was saying that they'd want me out there in May. And then I was planned to leave on my mission in July. And I already had the assignment to go to Indiana in July. And so that week the 2 weeks after that tournament were stressful. It was a lot of contemplation, a lot of research, a lot of prayer on just what would be a best fit and best opportunity for me. And ultimately, through a lot of counsel with my family and a lot of prayer, I then decided early April that I'd stay committed to Utah State, and that I was going to go there after my two-year mission.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Okay, so Indiana does not seem like, you know, Sam goes to Nicaragua. You go to Indiana. You go to Indiana. What was your, because I know they move you around as well. Was your first spot like when you get to Indiana?
So my first spot in Indiana, I was in, there's a town called Avon It's just west of Indianapolis. It borders with some towns of Brownsburg and some stuff just out the highway of 465 out there. And it was great. There's a lot of diversity in Indiana that I didn't know there was. I thought it was mainly going to be a lot of cornfields and outdoor basketball hoops, which there were plenty of that. But inside the city and the cities bordering Indianapolis, there's a lot of different diversity, which was super cool to learn about and to experience. And then I was actually in one of the only apartment complexes with an indoor basketball court. So that was
dope.
Yeah, it was perfect. So it was a perfect kind of adjustment into a mission with the opportunity that I could just walk down into the basement of the apartment complex and had a nice little half court setup, which was fun.
Okay. So that's like the opposite of most guys. So many guys, they don't even touch a basketball, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have teammates like Brock Miller who, like, we still make a joke. He's like, man, like, did you even go on a mission? And I was like, yes, I went on a mission. I maybe got to play a lot of basketball on that mission, but I did go on a mission. And Brock, he touched the ball like three times, and just the culture there. He went to South America as well. And, you know, it's a lot of soccer, and that's how you kind of connect with the people there. And luckily in Indiana, basically everybody that wanted to hear the message also wanted to play basketball. And so we'd play a little bit, and then after playing, the questions would start coming of, wait, like, how are you so good? Because they don't expect a little white kid and a shirt and tie to be a hooper or anything. So it was funny.
So what was that existence like for you in Indiana, preaching the gospel? You know, I know you have a partner with you. What was your experience like on your mission in terms of not the basketball element, the element of sharing the gospel?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it was life changing for me. And, you know, there's a lot of people that I was able to share the message of Jesus Christ and the restored gospel of Jesus Christ to a lot of people who were confused. They didn't know what to believe. I think especially with Christianity today and how many different religions there are and how many different beliefs there are, a lot of people just want some common ground, want some understanding of why that happened. And through my study and knowledge of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, I've been able to teach them about the confusion that went on after Christ left and how so many people have different views and how a lot of those views are very similar, but how there's specific things that God wants done. And it was cool to be able to bring that peace to them, which brought peace to me. And I was able to see my witness and testimony of Jesus Christ grow as I was teaching it to others, which was, I think, the biggest blessing of it all, honestly.
Well, okay, so dive deeper into that for me, if you would. Okay, so it feels like what you're saying is, like, look, you always believed, right? You always believed, you always had faith. But I mean, again, this is just me who I have no basis of knowledge.
Yeah,
it feels like, though, by sharing it and by having these discussions, all of a sudden now it became a lot more real to you. But explain what that, like, go a little further. What became more real to you? What specifically did you feel differently about when you were sharing it?
Yeah, I think like one of the biggest things that I thought of over and over again is like, before my mission, I would say that I believed in Jesus Christ. Like, I believed that he did come to earth. I believed that he was God's son. I believed that he performed miracles. I believed that he was resurrected and that because of that, we can all live again together. But after my mission and even during it, I felt like the term really became, I believe Jesus Christ. So it's not necessarily believing in him, but like, I believe him. I believe his words. I believe that when he says he can heal me, he can forgive me of my sins. It became very more real. And so I think that, one of the best ways to learn something is by teaching it. And I think that even applies to basketball, right? One of the best ways that I learn more about a move or learn more about a shooting technique is when I have young kids that are like, hey, how do you do this? Right. And it takes me a minute to think and say, well, I've done it forever. I know how to do it, but how would I help you do it? And so when I think about Jesus Christ, it's, you know, I believe in Jesus Christ, but when somebody asks me, well, how do I, or how can they, it becomes very more real in the sense of how I got that testimony, and how I've seen it change over the years. And honestly, right, when I got back from my mission, it needs to be the same thing. You know, if I'm not reading my scriptures or praying daily, then I can feel that sense of, you know, kind of taking a step back. The same thing is true with anything in our lives, whether it's basketball, work, education. You know, if we're not trying to excel at it, I think we're decelling in a way.
So I've always wondered, you know, like, this goes back to when I was an AAU player, middle school, high school. We played Utah teams, and they could all shoot and they'd all play, but also it always felt like they were like physical and tough. And it's kind of, honestly, like your boy Bean is like this, where if I met you in the hallway, I'd be like, man, that's the nicest kid ever. And then I play against you, and like, I don't like, they're so physical and I know some of the BYU Utah stuff, they get dirty, right? But it's like, just to that limit of physicality.
Yeah.
What's that like to carry? It's a little bit of a burden, right? Where you're a little white kid from Utah, dudes are going to come at you. You know, you spend a couple of years, you know, preaching the gospel. So guys think you're soft. How do you overcome that? Like, what is the, we can sit around and go in circles and talk about how we're not supposed to have stereotypes. But the truth is, when you walk into a gym, it's like, shooter, right?
Yeah.
But they also think you're soft. How do you overcome a stereotype like that? Where does it come from? And I don't think it's just you. I do think it's something about a lot of dudes from Utah.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't know if it's, I totally agree with it. I think I'll start with that. I think that, you know, we got the chess team joke a lot, wherever we were going, it's like, oh, like, this is going to be easy.
Chess team.
So I think that one of the things that it stems from is just the fact that when anybody's underestimated, there's a sense of, I have to prove something. And I think that, when you look at guys that are, you know, skinny shooters, I feel like we often feel like we're underestimated in our toughness. And so at some times we get even more, tough than we'd ever actually want to be. And so with that,
like almost an overcompensating
thing. Yeah. Yeah. It becomes a little bit of an overcompensation type of thing where I, even without you telling me what you're thinking, I know what you're thinking because I've experienced it time and time again. And so when I'm out there on the court, it's something, especially to me as a short, white point guard. And you know, as you watch this year, me and Rylan Jones play together, I think that, you'll see both of us, like, our games are very similar because it's the only way that we can make it to where we are today. If we weren't scrappy, if we weren't tough, if we couldn't shoot the lights out of the gym, then we wouldn't have the opportunity to be where we're at. And I think that you understand that just as well with how well you've played in different situations like that. And so, I think that it stems from, there is kind of a whispers going on in the state of Utah high school basketball that people don't think we're as good as we are. And so there's something to prove whenever we have the chance to go outside of the state. And I remember in my high school career, whenever anybody would go out of state, we always wanted them to win. Even though we wanted to beat them in the state championship, we wanted them to beat whoever they were playing out in California or Florida or Atlanta, type of things like that. And so I think that's kind of where it stems from.
So you guys have so much success last year, and then Coach Smith leaves and goes to Utah. What was your world like when that happened?
It was tough at first just because you create this culture, you create this family, and then you feel like the father figure just kind of walks out on you. And you understand why, but at the same time, you don't know why because of all the things that were said and all the things that were taught. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm never going to, you know, be upset with somebody who needed to improve their situation. And if he felt like if that was an improve of his situation, then that's his decision. But I remember finding out on Twitter that he was leaving, and then the team got a text message later from him. And I just remember talking with Bean, like, hey, like, it doesn't matter what's going to happen, like, who we're going to get, like, we're Aggies. Like, this is our place. This is where we're supposed to be. And so it turned out being perfect. And with Coach Odom coming in, it's been a great fit. And we're all excited for what we've got to prove this year and what we've got to do. And so I think it'll be really good once again.
Kind of weird, though, with like guys like, you know, Riley leaves, obviously. Some guys have stayed, some guys have left. You and Bean have stuck it out together.
Yeah.
Did you ever think of leaving?
No, not really. I mean, when the whole news came out, it was really more of a situation of just like let the cards fall where they may. And like, I never made plans to enter the transfer portal, never made plans to talk with any other coaches. It was really just between me and my guys. And I felt confident that really, I felt confident if we could have Bean and Brock stay, that we can build pieces, whoever comes in, whoever else stays, that we could build some great pieces around that. And that's what's happened. And we've had some great pieces come in and some other great players stay with us. And so I'm excited.
So how old is Brock?
Brock, I want to say he's 25, turning 26 soon.
I mean, I feel like he's almost old enough to be on the Lakers. Not yet.
Yeah, if the Lakers need an extra man, Brock might have to leave us for a few weeks.
Yeah.
To go play with them. But yeah, it's a running joke that we call him Grandpa. You know, he's seen a few sunrises, a few sunsets in his days. But yeah, I think that especially in the realm of college basketball, you can never underestimate how important it is to have a guy like Brock and guys with experience like that, especially come tournament times and when times get rough during the season, because there's always up and downs during the season. But to have guys who know how important it is to stay positive, to stay together is always vital to have on the team.
They have this expression in basketball, in college basketball, get old and stay old. No one accomplishes that better than Brock Miller, right? Like he totally gets it. Okay, yeah. So social media is fascinating, right? It really is.
Yeah.
In that, you know, some women, it feels like they're thirsty, right? They're looking for attention. For you, people have known you since high school, old game that where you lit up Montverde. Mm-hmm. And then in college now you succeeded. And Utah State, though it's not some gigantic fan base, like it is a very vibrant fan base. Okay, yeah. So they open up the name, image, and likeness deal. And I know you posted some stuff for, what was it, Body Armor?
Yeah.
Body Armor, right?
Yep.
So did they respond at all?
Yeah. Yeah. So I've actually had some good conversations with some companies like that. Body Armor was a cool one. I was actually, I messaged them just saying like, hey, I'm sure you're aware of the name, image, and likeness rules that have just changed. And this is probably the day of name, image, and likeness, because I'll be honest, before name, image, and likeness came out, one of the first things I was thinking is like, how do I get free Body Armor? How do I get buy Body Armor? Just because, you know, there's other drinks out there, but one of my things is that Body Armor to me, it feels like water, but it has a nice flavor to it to where it's not too sugary, especially like the Body Armor Light. And so I DM'd them the day Name, Image, and Likeness came out, and they probably responded 2 weeks later. And they said, "Hey, Steven, thanks so much for reaching out. Fill out this link. We're about to post something with Name, Image, and Likeness athletes." And so they reached out to me, and I filled it out. And then later that week, I see that they started this brand U ambassador thing for Body Armor. Body Armor U is what they called it. And so they sent me a few packages already, and we'll kind of see what goes on from there. Obviously, it would be cool to have it be more of a frequent thing, and maybe be one of the college athletes that gets an opportunity to be in a commercial or advertisement for them or something like that. But
so it kind of feels like you know, Oprah does Oprah's favorite things, right? Kind of feels like that's, and this is a good philosophy for you. It's like, pick out the stuff that you really like and you legit use, and then hit them up and go like, "Hey, do you want to do a name, image, and likeness?" And see where it goes, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I have some good mentors that understand the business aspect and branding, and so it's been good because, you know, nobody's going to want to buy something that I promote if I don't actually use it, you know, and so it wouldn't make sense as a part of my brand either to promote something I don't stand for or use. So
you got to do hair product, right?
Oh, no, I actually, Boneyard Barbering we've done a few things with them. And so he's excited for you to come get your cut when you come commentate one of our games this year.
I just got a freshie here in Orange County, but I'm going to Boneyard.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I wish I had somebody that good when I was in school, when I had better hair. You know, I had great hair. I had great hair, but we had a guy who passed away, Whispering Richard, and he was coach's guy, but he wasn't very good. He was a super nice guy.
Yeah.
I'd cut my own hair. One of your teammates would come cut your hair. It's just terrible fades. You know, you're like, look back, you're like, God, I was so cheap.
Yeah.
So cheap. I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
But now you don't have to be cheap. Now you'd be like, "Hey, look, dude, if you cut my hair, I'll promo you." Right. Like that's the deal.
Yeah, exactly. And, we've been talking about some other ideas, and he actually has some hair cream that I use. And so we've been talking about different ways to possibly promote that and get that out to people, which is a really good product. And so I've talked to Whoop, who just released their new product, and they messaged me back with just some feedback that they haven't quite figured out their logistical, stance on Whoop and sponsoring college athletes. So we'll see what happens there as well.
Yeah. So it's going to end up, I mean, I'm surprised you haven't, you got to be like a NASCAR guy when I interview you, you know, be like, "Hey, thanks. You know, like the Whoop hair and the Nike shoes and the, I was drinking Body Armor." And then you start answering the questions, right? You got to drop in like all the sponsors. I'll be honest with you. I think the other than the things that you like, the other ones you can do is find companies that are owned or run by Mormons and then somehow integrate it into, you know, "Hey, a portion of what I ever get is going to the church." And like, then you kind of make it like the Mormon mafia, where all the Mormon companies are the ones that support you guys with name, image, and likeness.
Yeah, it's true.
You're also married, right? 4 months now?
Yeah, 4 months now.
What's that like? What's it been like for you?
It's been great. Got married to Peyton in May of this year, and we were high school sweethearts. We met in high school, and I went on my mission, and she went to Paraguay on her mission. So she kind of got the same vibe of Sam and Brock. Not much basketball,
right? So you're in Indiana, hooping in some nice apartment complex.
Yeah.
She's in Paraguay.
Right? Yeah.
Your experience could not be more different.
Yeah. Literally couldn't be more different. Absolutely. And so
anytime you go to, you know, or I'm guessing they speak Spanish in Paraguay, right? So I'm sure anytime somebody speaking Spanish, she goes, flips the switch, and all of a sudden you're like, whoa, what is going on there?
Yeah. It was perfect. We actually went on our honeymoon to Puerto Vallarta. And so she got to basically run the show down there, which was perfect. And so it's been great, though. married life's fun. It's fun to have somebody to live with up here in Logan, especially because we were doing long distance all last year because she was going down to school down in Provo. And so it's good to have her up here and to have somebody up here.
Wait, so you got her to transfer? So that did she enter the transfer portal and then you got her to transfer to USU?
So she didn't quite enter the transfer portal. She did move, but she's just doing online. And, you know, with COVID, it was able to, you know, kind of work out to where there's a lot more online availability. And so she's still doing her degree online. And this next summer, she might have to take some classes down there in person. But so far, it's worked out really well.
What are the challenges like? And I know you guys haven't hit full season, but you guys are having practices and workouts. But easier or more difficult now that you have a spouse, right? Now you have basketball, you have school, and you have a wife.
Yeah.
How are your days changed from last year?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things is just prioritizing. Prioritizing what's important. There's obviously some necessities that I'll have to take care of every day. Her being first, and then obviously basketball practice and weights and other schoolwork that'll have to take place. And so I think rather than after finishing my schoolwork and after finishing all my workouts, just hanging out with the boys, it's been a lot more time with her doing things that she wants to do. But she's also been super supportive of all the name, image, and likeness stuff. And she'll even come to the gym and rebound for me after she gets home from work. And so we have some fun times bonding out there, and we play golf quite a bit together. She's a golfer, so that's nice.
She better than you?
Not quite. I'm playing pretty well. When I don't play great, she's better, but I've been playing pretty well recently.
Same tees, same tee boxes?
No, different tee boxes.
What is the biggest difference I will notice in you playing for Coach Odom?
I think the biggest difference you'll notice is freedom. I felt like I played pretty freely last year, but I still had more to give and more to offer, I felt like. And I think that the way that our offense is set up this year and just the different tools that we have, we'll be able to play with a lot more freedom. And I think you'll see a lot more of me creating and then facilitating off of screen and roll, and just off of, I've improved quite a bit this offseason with just dribble penetration and being able to make decisions in the lane. And that was a focus just after last year, looking at the percentages from 2-point and 3-point line and wanting to obviously improve that. And, you know, the goal to be like Steph Curry with the 90-50-40 club and stuff like that. And so that's probably the biggest difference you'll see.
You're an incredible free throw shooter. What's your routine?
My simple routine when I get to the line is I'll take a deep breath. I'll focus on the very front of the rim. And then I'll just take one dribble and then get it into that shooting pocket and straight up. And I always try to line up. I don't necessarily line up my foot with the nail. I try to line up with where I release the ball with the nail, which is just a little bit to the right side of my head.
So is the nail slightly to the right of your foot? How do you line up your feet with the nail?
Yeah. So my right foot would be slightly outside of the nail. So the nail is going to be
inside. Well, I'm to the left. Right.
Yes. To the left. So if I'm
you have that perfect shot where you shoot off your right shoulder.
Right? Yeah, right here. So, yeah.
Okay, so you take a breath. Mm-hmm. First, you line up your feet. Take a breath. You look at the front of the rim. You take one dribble, shot pocket, shoot. Are you saying anything to yourself? Is there some way in which you finish every time? Like anything else?
Yeah, so one of the things that I always do is I'll actually, when I take my dribble, I'll say swish. And so I'm not thinking, I think I kind of started that in around eighth grade. I stopped thinking like, oh, I should make this shot. And it's kind of changed my mindset, which I think has really helped to like, I don't make shots. I want to swish shots because I'm already expecting it to go in. And so If I swish it, then I'm really pleased. If I make it, that's great. And then also just in the practice of it, I never leave a gym without making 10 free throws in a row. And so that's kind of, and obviously I shoot a lot of free throws throughout the workout. And I try to integrate it to where, you know, I'm getting a high heart rate. And so it's game like to where I've got to slow it down just a little bit, but still feel it to where I'm making it in pressure situations. And then, I'm feeling good.
You mentioned your workouts. How many, is there a number of shots you try and get up every day?
Yeah. So, I'm actually starting, I've created a few workout plans and I'm actually going to promote it, here in the next week or so. I'm going to try to create a training brand in a way. And I'm going to call it the Breakfast Club, after one of the famous stories of Kobe Bryant and the USA Olympic team back in 2008 and how, they called themselves the Breakfast Club because they were getting up early. They were getting their work done early before practice. And then, it just kind of unified the team. And so, the goal is to make 500 shots a day. And so it would be considered the 500 club. And a lot of that is off the dribble. A lot of that is form shots. So I try to make sure that, you know, sometimes inside the 500 realm, sometimes outside. So maybe it'll be a little more than 500. I'm making at least a 50 to 100 form shots a day, just to make sure that it's all dialed in.
The 500 are in one workout, or do you have a plan to where you go in the morning and you go in the evening? Like how does it, in your mind, what's the best way to do it?
So my mind, ideally, I would say it's 500 in one workout. And then it just depends based on my day. If I know that I don't have enough time to make the 500 in between class and before practice or other things, then I'll get in as many as I can. And then I'll save some of it for after practice. And then I'll get in the rest of it. And so ideally it would be just to be able to set a time apart to where, you know, you can get in that 500. But if it needs to be split into, you know, an hour in the morning and an hour at night, it typically takes me probably 75 minutes to finish 500 on the move off, you know, and I obviously try to shoot some just standing still shooting because you do get some of those in the game. But a lot of those are sprinting to a corner, sprinting in transition just to make it as game-like as possible.
You don't use your thumb. It's a perfect shot.
Yeah.
How'd you develop that? Like, when did you have the strength to shoot with one hand and no left thumb?
That started actually in eighth grade. So in eighth grade was when, Quincy Lewis, actually, he pulled me aside after one of the open gyms that we were having. And he said, "Hey, this is going to be hard, but this is something that you're going to need to do to play at the next level." And he actually walked through with me the changing, because, you know, I kind of use my thumb and I'll push it from here, sure, underneath my chin a little bit. It was still a good form, but obviously it wasn't perfect. And he just worked on elevating it more to up right above my forehead to where I could get it. And he worked, and honestly, it's something I still do today, where we worked on a lot where I would just cup it like this, the ball, yep, and then one hand turn and over and turn and over. And then, I remember talking with George Hill a few years ago, and he was telling me that when, like, the first year he got to the Spurs, he shot it all right and he thought he had a great shot. And then that next summer, they're like, "Hey, we need to change your shot." And he was saying that he would make 500 form shots a day and they wouldn't let him shoot outside of 10 feet for a month. And he just had to shoot it over and over. And he's like, just because of, you know, and I think anybody that wants to change their shot, they just have to be patient enough to give it the time to develop, because it's not going to be perfect after a day or even a few days or even a few weeks. It takes that time, but being confident enough that it'll pay off in the end, which it has for me.
You told me you say swish when you shoot a free throw. What are the thoughts, or do you have any, when you're in a game as far as shooting the basketball? Do you have any thoughts, things you say to yourself, things that you always do, like as part of kind of your catch and shoot or go off the dribble routine?
Yeah. So one thing that I always try to do is that before I get into the form of it, because that's become second nature. I always try to focus on the front three prongs of the rim. So where the net connects with the rim, I'll try to find three of those. And sometimes you can only find two based on the angle you're at. And you just kind of, I always try to aim right for that middle prong. And then I focus on the rim all the way until I release it. And then typically about the last, you know, 7 to 9 feet of it coming down, I'll actually look at the ball and I'll see if it was going in between those three. And then after that, I know if it was a little right, but still went in, then I know that I either turned my hand a little too much, or it was just maybe because of the way I was balanced. And so that's actually something that I learned from Steph Curry, watching a few of his documentaries and different things of how he likes to shoot. And it's something that I tried and I really liked.
So he looks at ball flight.
Yeah. So he's a ball flight shooter. And I know that some guys are heavily never look at the ball. Some guys look right after they release it. But my thing is always that I've naturally kind of always looked at the rim and then seen the ball come over, but I've started more so looking at it. And then it's given me a better idea too of what the trajectory was like on its way to the rim, of if it was too flat or even if it had too much arc, which is hard to do, but those type of things that I can look at and analyze.
Steph's the best in your mind, from shooter to shooter, is Steph the best shooter?
Yes. Stephen Curry is the greatest shooter of all time in my mind. I think that you can nitpick a few things of maybe Klay Thompson has a prettier shot or a better form or maybe a better standstill shooter. But I think when you're talking about a shooter, you have to be able to attribute every single shot and every single aspect that he can shoot.
He can go right, he can go left, and obviously he has an unbelievably quick release and unlimited range. Like, but the idea that he can go right and left and stand still is crazy. It's just, it's, you know, because most everybody has like, well, I really like, I remember when I was at Notre Dame, we ran a play called three side. My coach was the late John McLeod, who's an old NBA coach. And until the very last game of the year, every pick and roll we ran was to the right. And he's like, well, you're right-handed. Like, yeah, right-handed is most guys actually shoot the ball better going left. I couldn't really confidently shoot, and I would work on it every day in college, but I'm like, my whole life I was off the dribble going left. But the idea that he can shoot going either way is just, that's the most remarkable.
Yeah, and I think that, like, I've looked at that, and even just the way that, like, I was even talking about this with Rylan the other day. Like, a crossover pull-up has never felt natural to me. Like,
well, not just that, but listen, here's the, it's not just, it's not natural. That was always deemed to be a bad shot.
Yeah.
Like, never shoot off. I was always never shoot off a crossover. And then he, like, he violates that. Right. I mean, but he makes such a high percentage, and it must be from working on it and his balance and how cleanly he picks it up. Do you seam the ball when you pick it up?
Yeah. So I'm a big seam shooter. Anywhere I catch it, it'll be usually a left hand kind of turn to get the seams.
Have you practiced? Do you have any tricks for that?
I think part of it is that I have actually had workouts where I tell them never pass it to me with the seams. And so with that is I'll always catch it off the seam and I'll always have to quickly turn it. Or there's even part of me that I have a little level of OCD. And so whenever I pass the ball, I always pass it to them where it's in the pocket.
On the seams in the pocket.
And so I can actually, when the ball is coming to me, I don't know if I've practiced it or if it's just become second nature. I can actually see where the seams are. And so I actually tend to change my hand position of how I catch it to where it catches it on the seam. So I don't necessarily have to turn it as much.
Okay. I hadn't heard of that trick. That's a really good one. Last thing, shoes. What is your, not what was your shoe game like? Do you wear the same shoes all season? Do you change them after a loss? Do you wait until they're just like flat tires and they're dead? Is there a certain style of shoe, you know, that like, I will only wear these shoes? You mentioned OCD, guys that have a little OCD, they do the same thing give me your shoe, not your shoe game in terms of what do you wear around town, but your shoe game in terms of playing.
Yeah. First off, I'll only play in Nikes. And that's the only shoe I'll wear on the court. And then secondly, I'm a Kobe guy. I grew up a Lakers fan. My dad taught me young that we're Lakers fans, and I always loved
that. Isn't that sacrilege in Utah?
Hey, it is a little bit, but my dad's from Vegas, and so we're Dodgers fans, we're Lakers fans. You know, that was the closest sports team, and his grandpa was big Lakers and Dodgers fans, so he grew up going to the games, which were about 2 hours away from Vegas. And so so I grew up wearing Kobe's, and then when I was on my mission, he passed. And I still remember that day just sitting in church, and I got a message like, "Hey, Kobe just died." And I was like, "Wait, what?"
So okay, let's go to that day. Okay. Okay. I'll tell you where I was. So, I had gotten back from calling a game. My daughter is an equestrian rider, and we're sitting there and she's warming up. And all of a sudden I get a text that's like, "There's no way this is real." And then a couple other dudes like, "No way, no way." And all my friends, they think, because, you know, when you work in sports, I somehow know what's a real story. And I do, but like not when it breaks.
Yeah.
And then they're like, "Did you check Twitter? Kobe died." And I looked, I was like, and no one knew it was real or fake, but it was TMZ. And generally they don't miss. Right.
Yeah.
So my daughter actually, then she's riding in the ring in a show. She is great. She wins, and she gets out of the ring, and she's walking her horse back to the grooms, and she's bawling. Now, she had gone to school with Gianna, who died in the crash.
Yeah.
But she wasn't like she knew Kobe. And at the time it said that nobody in her family was with her. And she starts crying. I go up to her, and turns out actually her best friend was on the helicopter, Alyssa Altobelli. And she knew Gianna, and she knew basically almost everybody on that plane. She knew the chopper. She knew. So that was my day. What church were you in? What town in Indiana?
Yeah. So I was actually on campus at IUPUI. So right downtown in Indianapolis, and the church building was just right off the river, the White River down there. And I remember I was in like the second hour of church, so Sunday school. And I was actually reading the scripture, and everybody in the class kind of just like stopped, because like we all got notifications,
do you have your phone on you? Is it like, what is, I again, every church is different. You have your phone on you and start fuzzing, or did somebody else start looking at their phone and then you look at yours? How did it go down?
Yeah. So there's a church app with all of our scriptures on it. And so I had the church app open, and then I got, you know, different text messages or messenger, Facebook messenger, different stuff like that. And so Facebook is actually the approved social media for missionaries. So I didn't have Twitter. I didn't have Instagram. I just had Facebook, and I get this message, like, "Check this out." Like I get another message. "I can't believe he died. Like, you know, what's happening," like all of this stuff. And I was like, "There's no way, like, this isn't real." But then like the leader of the congregation after Sunday school came up to me. He's like, "Hey, like, I know you're a basketball player. I know missionaries don't have a lot of access to stuff, but like, did you hear that Kobe Bryant died?" And like, that's when it like hit. I was like, "No way. Like, this can't be real." And then every Sunday night, we called the different missionaries to see like how their week was, see if they need anything. And one of the elder missionaries was from California, like, answered the phone. He was just like bawling. And he was just like so sad. He grew up a Lakers fan just like me. And like, I still remember that pain that like we felt together. Like, we didn't know him like personally or anything, right? But when something like that happens to people who just, you know, love somebody, it's painful to see. And, you know, I couldn't imagine for your family, especially your daughter who knew them personally, what it would be like. But I think that also sparks why I love wearing them even today. You know, it's kind of like living on his legacy. And I love the Kobe 4s, 5s, and 6s, and
Those are probably my go-to pairs that I wear for games. I've gotten a few more this offseason that hopefully I'll be able to showcase. And
so do you, but are you like superstitious? Like you play well in one, you keep wearing those? Do you rotate? No,
actually, in high school, I was very superstitious. So there's a pair of shoes that I didn't have a great game in, and then they were out of the rotation, even though I loved them. Like I'd still practice in them because they're some of my favorites, but like no games.
What shoes were those?
They're actually the Kobe 11s. They're this nice pair of Kobe 11s that I got for Christmas one year. And then I had to go to the Kobe ADs, which actually were my personal favorite, but like they're okay. But I played really well on them for a while. So I was like, I got to keep rocking with it. And we actually won the state championship. So I guess it worked.
What'd you wear against Montverde?
I wore some LeBrons. So we got invited to Geico, right? And my buddy's dad bought the same black and gold, because our colors were black and gold and maroon. He bought these black and gold Kobe's or LeBrons. Right. I'm like, I never wear LeBrons. Like,
they're so heavy. They're so, I mean, people like their mate, he's a 6'8", 260-pound dude. Their shoes made for him.
Yeah.
So you're wearing some space boots dropping 27 on Montverde?
Yeah, exactly. And so like then my buddy's like, bro, you gotta wear those every game in college. I'm like, dude, I can't wear those. Like they're bricks, but like they were really comfy actually. Like they did have a lot of cushion. So that game against Montverde, it was like one of the only games I never wore Kobe's. I wear some Kyrie's sometimes. I do like Kyrie's mainly because they remind me of early Kobe's and the way that they feel and stuff. But in college, yeah, I think mentally, I don't know if it's gotten over, but the superstition of shoes, but I think I'm kind of past that, which I think is good in a way, just because I think I need to be able to be confident enough that no matter what shoe I play in, I'll be able to play good.
Okay. So let's just say Utah State plays in the Final Four next year.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, you said, I like fours, fives, and sixes, but you only get to pick one. And the Nike guys come in, you're in Logan, you're at the practice facility, right? And they're like, hey, what shoes do you want to wear in the Final Four? What's your official answer?
I'm asking for something exclusive here that they haven't made to the public, but I'm going with the purple Devin Booker Kobe 4s. So those purple ones that he wore basically the whole playoffs, those would be the shoe that I'd wear. Just because I feel like they'd stand out a little bit, but also that the Kobe 4s are super comfy.
Yeah, just a little bit. Just the shoes. It's like when you wore the Grinches, right? Just enough, but not so over the top, right? You want to be the guy that's got the arm sleeve, you know, and a headband and the shoes and the sweatbands or whatever. It's like just a little Grinch, you know, green or some purple shoes. I like it. It's an understated deal.
Yeah.
All right, dude, listen, I know you got to go. You got a heart out. I do as well. It was great to catch up with you. And
sure.
Congratulations on your nuptials. Let's catch up again in Logan, and let's get you some more NIL deals, right? We got to make you a Nike athlete. You got to, obviously the Boneyard, I'm coming. We got to get their hair products going and then continue to all of the Stephen Ashworth things, right? That's what you got to. I can't believe you haven't hit up Ashworth. Now it's golf gear, but you haven't hit up Ashworth. Got to hit some of those guys.
That's true. That would be a go-to. I mean, I think I could get something with Ashworth golf gear, kind of like the Curry brand, you know, in golf. And so I don't even know how I haven't even thought of that one. I'm going to text them right now. But yeah, if you know anybody at Nike, hook me up. I'd love to wear some out there type of shoes that are kind of just underlying, nothing too crazy. But, you know, I'm a Nike guy, and, you know, that'd be a dream come true to be able to have some Nike gear like that.
Thanks so much for all the shooting advice and all those thoughts. I appreciate you joining me and being my guest on All Pro.
For sure. Take care, Doug. Great to see you.
Likewise.
Wasn't that a fun combo? I thought it was great. By the way, if you like what you hear, make sure you write us a positive review. I think it benefits the pod somehow. A reminder, the Doug Gottlieb Show is daily, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific, on the iHeartRadio app, FoxSportsRadio.com, SiriusXM 217 or 203. My thanks to Stephen Ashworth and any of those companies that want to link up with him, you can do so. Find him on social media. Find him on Twitter. Make sure my boy gets paid. In the meantime, listen to Doug Gottlieb's show, 12 to 3 Eastern. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball.